Take one of an interview between Karen Duder and the date is the 4th of November, 1998. Okay, could I ask when and where you were born?
I was born on Belle Island, Newfoundland.
Okay, and your parents, what were your parents' occupations?
My father was a miner, and my mother was a homemaker. And my mother died shortly after I was born.
Had she worked before marriage? Do you know anything about her family background?
I don't think she did. She was, I think, around 17 when she married my dad. And as I said, she died shortly after I was born. She was 22, I think, when she died. 22, 23 when she died, so. Given the fact that it was Belle Island, Newfoundland, I don't think she would have had an opportunity to get out and work. I don't think she was highly educated. I know certainly my father was not highly educated. My father had about a grade two or so. My father went in the mines down the pits when he was 13 or so. That's the way it was.
Were they both Canadian born?
Yes. Well, we weren't Canadians then.
Yeah, true.
We weren't Canadians until 1949. Mm-hmm. My mother's father was a Labrador Eskimo, and she came from a very, very large family. It's something I've never thought of, but I really doubt that she would have had any kind of employment. Mm-hmm. I think, she probably went. If she had any kind of employment, it would have probably been keeping house or looking after somebody, maybe somebody older in the community or somebody needing. But, you know, having her own, her first child at around 17 or so, well, I can't imagine. Mm-hmm. She had enough on her hands.
How many children were there in your family?
There were four of us with my mother. And my sister Elsie is 5 years older than me, and there were two boys in between. So, you know, she had her children pretty quick. Four of us within a 5-year span. And then my dad married after that when I was 5 years old. He married. And so I have a sister and two brothers behind me. I had a sister and two brothers ahead of me and sister and two brothers behind me. I am the middle child. However, I am known as the matriarch of the family. No kidding. Everybody looks up to Shirley in the family. I'm Swami, I know it all. Anyway, okay, onward.
So how much older, or was your dad older than your mother when they married? Was he about the same age?
Yeah. I don't think there was a great difference. They were both very young. Yeah. Too young for... for raising a family so quickly, you know, for children. But then again, we all grew up really, really fast back there. You know, if he was 13 and he was working down in the mines, he was a man at 13. I My sister, my two brothers, myself, we were all out working when we were very, very young. Very young. I was 15 when I first started to work. Elsa was probably, and the boys were probably even younger. Yes, education wasn't something that was really impressed upon us making a living, I think, was the thing. Because we were poor folk, so, we didn't have a lot of money, and so it sort of, Dad didn't discourage us when we decided that we wanted to go out and earn some money. And I'm not in any way blaming him, because we could make our own choice. But, we all sort of grew up quickly. I was not a teenager. I didn't have a teenage life, as most people know, teenage life. Working since I was about 15, I didn't go to all the things that the other girls did, you know. And it was fine. I didn't mind. I sort of liked being mature. The mature woman. I'm 15. In a gay relationship when I'm 15.
Oh, so God. That was when you left school at 15 and yes. Went into the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And you would all have been schooled locally, wouldn't you?
Yeah. You see, when I was five, we moved. My dad, when I was probably a couple of years old, my dad left Newfoundland and went, he and my father, his father, so my father and my grandfather and my uncle, his brother. The three men went looking for work in Sydney, Nova Scotia. Mm-hmm. And they all got work at the steel plant. And the war was on. And they didn't take Dad off to work after the war, because he was a single parent with four children. And I think my uncle was still a little bit too young at that point. And my grandmother, my father's mother, she looked after the four of us from my mom's death to us moving to immigrating, actually, to Canada. Mm-hmm. We immigrated in November of 1946. So I guess I was 5.5 years old when we immigrated to Canada. And and it was shortly after then, it was in March of 47, that my grandmother, she died when she delivered us to our new mother. She was not well, and she just made sure that she stayed well enough to deliver us, and that was it. So, what else? Yeah, so I immigrated to Canada, and your question was whether or not my parents were born in Canada. No, they were born in Newfoundland. Mm. Colony. Mm. They were born in the colony.
Do you think was religion important in your childhood growing up?
It was to my father. Mm. Wasn't to me. We were Anglican. And my father didn't like it. I mean, it was the real orange and the green. God, when I think about that. If I came home and said that I had a new friend, my dad would say, is she Catholic or Protestant? Well, I could never understand why that made a difference. And most often, she would be Catholic. And even at the young age that I was, I guess I had my own convictions at an early age, because I thought, well, she's my friend, she's not your friend, so what difference does it make? I like her for who she is, not for whether or not she goes to Don Bosco school, which was a Catholic school. And it was the same thing when my sister Elsie started dating, and when the boys started dating, you know, they'd come home and say, oh, they got a girlfriend or they got a boyfriend. And, you know, Dad's question was always, what is his or her name? It's, is he or she Catholic or Protestant? And I just, to this day, I could still not understand why that had anything to do with the price of tea in China. You know, it's, my dad was a, he belonged to the Fisherman's Lodge. And I guess the Fisherman's Lodge were very, very much associated with the Orangeman's Lodge. So... So religion didn't matter to me, but did matter to my father. We had to go to church on Sunday morning. We had to then return in the early afternoon for Sunday school. Now, across the street, that was at the Anglican Church, across the street at the United Church, they were quite civilized, because you went to church. The parents went to church and took the children. And partway through the service, it was time for all the children to get up and go in the hall of the church and attend their Sunday school. They didn't have to sit there and listen to all the drivel that the minister was going on with. No. So that's why I say the United ones, they were really quite privileged. Civilized. No, we had to go. We had to sit there. We had to be there about, 20 to 11. And we'd sit there in our pew, waiting and fidgeting and whatever. And then the service would start at 11. 12 o'clock it was over. We'd go home, have lunch, and then have to be back there for 2 o'clock. And I think Sunday school lasted at least an hour. And sort of shot the hell out of our Sundays. And sometimes, as we started to get a little bit older, because Mom and Dad didn't go to church on Sunday mornings, only the kids did. Mom and Dad went to Evensong. So, sometimes we got to go to Evensong. So, as I say, religion wasn't something that I went, and I didn't care about it one way or the other. You know, if I went, that was fine. If I didn't go, that was fine as well. Yeah. So.
Now, you never married, am I correct?
That's correct.
Right. Okay.
Nobody ever asked me.
Does that mean you would have if they had?
I only said that because when I was being interviewed in the Air Force, you know, when they suspected that we were all lesbians, and we were interviewed by the psychiatrist. I mean, he was as batty as a, like he should live in a belfry. He just, he asked me all kinds of silly questions. And he said, "Are you a virgin?" I said, "Yes." "Why?" So I said, "Well, nobody asked me not to be one." So that's why I had to shoot back with that. You're married. Actually, somebody did ask me to marry them. And I said no. Because it was a man. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I realized, well, I guess we were, I didn't say no right away, we were engaged for a little while. But then I decided, well, you know, when we went out for dinner and we were both looking at the women, there was something wrong with the picture.
Now, I'm going to ask you more about that later because I know some details of that story already. First, I have, you know, in my questions, I have all of this stuff about childhood and adolescence, but from the things that you've said, it sounds as if you did not do a lot of the things that particularly adolescents do. But what about childhood? Did you play with your brother, with your all your siblings, or did you play with other kids from school? Or
both? Both. Mm-hmm. Used to play doctor and nurse. I always wanted to be the doctor. Didn't figure that out until later on in life.
Nobody special who always had to be your nurse.
This won't hurt, did it? Well, you know, we were, we didn't have a lot of things. Like, we didn't have bikes, for instance. We didn't have a lot of things. So we did play well together because I was such a close age to my brothers. My sister, even though she was only 5 years older than me, she was 5 years older than me. But the two boys were closer in age. And we were very, very, we had a family who had an older girl who was the same age as Elsie, and the younger girl who was the same age as me, and one boy in between. So my brothers were really friendly with him, and I was very friendly with the youngest, and my sister Elsie was very friendly with the oldest. So we sort of, you know, the boys, and her name was Dolly. Dolly and I, and three boys, we got along well together, and with other kids as well. So I played with both my, you know, my siblings and my friends. But playing was a lot of, I invented a lot of things in my mind. I played a lot in my mind, like when I was in school and I was supposed to be learning. I seemed to have the capability of being able to have an imaginary story going on in my mind, you know, breaking my eraser up into little bits and having people jumping all over the place and, you know, kiss and all of this stuff, and still retain what I was sort of hearing out of one ear from the teacher, because all through school I was, I guess I was considered to be an above average student. And when I told my teacher in grade 9 that I would not be going to grade 10 because it was over at the academy, and Dad had sort of sat me down and talked to me about it was going to be difficult financially to send me to the academy. So I didn't mind, you know. I sort of suggested to him, well, I'll go out to work. You know, we haven't got any money, so I'll go out and work. So that teacher, my grade 9 teacher, she actually cried when I told her that I wasn't going to continue on with my education. Because she just felt that I was really, really going to, you know, that I had it. She considered me a very bright student, and she figured that, you know, with the education, I was just going to go everywhere. And I think at the time I felt, and I probably told her that, you know, you can be what you want to be. You know, maybe it's going to take a little bit more. So all through my school years, I was still close with my brothers and my friends. So we chummed around together and got into trouble together and whatever.
Any friend in particular that was special in your group?
Yeah. Well, aside from Dolly. Dolly was special, but I did meet, I was probably maybe 12, 13, and I met a girl who, she was Catholic, by the way. I shouldn't have been seeing her. we became quite friendly, and she was a sort of a touchy type of person. And actually, going to and from school, we'd hold hands, and I always thought this was the greatest thing since sliced bread. You know, I mean, it just made me feel so great. You know, that this girl was holding my hand. And I remember I used to do stupid things, like, you know, my father used to walk on the outside because it was the thing to do, you know. My mother never got to walk on the curbside of the road when they were walking. He always walked to the outside because that's what gentlemen were supposed to do. Well, when, God, I can't even remember her name. Boy, she left a lasting impression, didn't she? Whatever her name was, what's her face? We'd walk hand in hand, but I always placed myself on the outside. And I don't think she noticed, but I noticed. I always felt that I needed to be the protector. Mm. You know, the one that if anyone was gonna get splashed by the traffic, it would be me. Who's the guy? Is there Walter Raleigh? Taking the jacket off? I would have done that too. So, yeah, she was special, but I can't remember her name. She had a boyfriend too. Or she got a boyfriend. And so that sort of quietened things between us, because she started seeing him. And I guess it sort of fizzled out. And I just went onward and upward, I guess.
So did you have a sort of crush on her, do you think?
Oh, yeah. Mm. Absolutely. Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know it until later on, what my feelings were. But, you know, when you're 12, 13, and all of a sudden these things are coming alive inside of you that you didn't know you had. And, you know, yeah, every time we held hands, I had this warm, wonderful feeling. And, oh, God, I used to wonder what it would be like to kiss her. But then again, you know, when I was in Nova Scotia, you went to school from grade 1 to grade 12. There was no kindergarten. There was no grade 13. So, you know, you started when you're 6 years old and you went through. But so when I was 6 years old, I think my first teacher was Miss McDonald. She was either grade 1 or grade 2. God, I love that woman. I just had the greatest crush on her. At, you know, when you're laying in your bed at nighttime and you're supposed to be going off to sleep. Of course, the war is over now, but I used to dream, not dream after I fell asleep, so I guess you'd say daydream. I used to daydream about me being some sort of a, well, usually an Air Force pilot, you know, sort of a la Snoopy. with the hat on, you know, the leather hat, flight hat, and the white silk scarf, the bomber jacket. So I used to envision myself as coming home from the war to Miss McDonald. Mm. She was sick one time. And we made a basket for her. We made the basket and then we put fruit in it. And fruit was not something that was easy to come by. However, we put fruit in it. And then somebody had to go and deliver it to Miss McDonald. Well, guess who volunteered? She invited me in and I got to sit, and of course there was somebody else with me. There were two of us got to deliver it. I would rather have gone on my own, but you know. So isn't it amazing? I was 6 years old or 7 years old or whatever I was. And I had this great attraction for this teacher. But the thing of, you know, thinking of myself as a pilot coming home, you know, as the hero coming home to Miss McDonald. Didn't even know her first name. I was going to call her Miss McDonald the rest of my life. But, yeah, she was probably my first love. And then this other one, God, her name, it just escapes me, but it's sort of this close to I want to say Claire, but it's not Claire, but it's something very close to that. But anyway, so she was sort of my second love. There was never any guys that I was interested in. You know, just wasn't. Boys didn't attract me. And when I was in grade 9, some of the girls dated some of the guys. And so I guess this guy thought, we went to the movies. And so, you know, we sat in the movies. And so he put his arm around me and whatnot. And then by the time we got out of the movie, it was dark. It must have been in the wintertime because it was probably a matinee that we went to. And anyway, so we went somewhere, and then he walked me home, and he kissed me. Well, I guess I could have sang the old Peggy Lee song, Is That All There Is? Because, you know, I just said, you know, here are these girls at school who are just being all giggly and everything, and oh, he kissed me, and they were all sick. And it didn't do a thing for me.
Yeah. Hey, whoever listens to this tape in the future is going to
hear this. This is Joshua the dog playing with his dolly in the background.
That's very funny.
Okay.
So it sounds like you didn't really get into dating that much. No.
No, wasn't my thing. No, probably if I'd realized how nice it was to kiss a woman or a girl, I probably would have been doing that at a much younger age.
Now, you're sort of, you know, walking on the outside wanting to be the pilot and that.
These are all sort of masculine things. Yeah. But I never ever considered, you know, when I actually got it. Mike? Come here, Mike. what was I saying? Yeah, about not dating.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, I just didn't have any desire to date the boys. But, I suppose had it been something that I was even familiar with, but I knew nothing, absolutely nothing, about a woman being with a woman or a girl being with a girl or a boy being with a boy. Mm. Knew nothing. It was Sydney, Nova Scotia. I mean, what more can I say, you know? It was the city. It was, you know, we weren't country hicks or anything, but we, that was such a taboo subject that, given that time in the, that was in the 50s. So in the 50s, yeah, it was still pretty well a taboo subject, and of course, against the law. So, no, so it's not a surprise that I didn't hear anything about it, you know. I mean, I couldn't pick up the well of loneliness, yeah. Mm. No, I just wasn't privy to anything. So, so when I had these feelings, I didn't think anything much about them. But then, when I did get into a relationship, I wasn't either, you know, I can't say that one of us was passive and the other aggressive, or one was the butch and the other the femme, or however you want to put it. We were just who we were, and that's it. There was no role playing. Mm-hmm. And never in any of my relationships has there been any role playing. All throughout my life, I've always considered myself I never considered myself as a butch or a femme. Bev didn't consider herself as either a butch or a femme. Neither did Gertie. No. No, it just wasn't something that I was ever into, and I guess it wasn't necessary. But in my youth, I guess, in order, because I didn't know, so maybe to justify in my own mind why I had these feelings, I would think it was probably in some little person way in the back of my mind who's telling me that as a girl, I couldn't feel so so good about another girl or Miss McDonald. You know, so I think that's why I had to transfer myself into the male role. And so I guess way back then I probably did some role playing only because I didn't know any different. And there's no way I would have been able to justify that in my mind. You know, being a girl with a girl. So, but I guess I never thought of it. Mm-hmm. I just enjoyed the feelings.
Would you ever have described yourself as a tomboy when you were growing up or anything like
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. We went to the Saturday matinees. Roy Rogers, Dale Evans, Gene Autry. Huh, God. Occasionally, even Tom Mix. I was always, I came out of those matinees always riding an imaginary horse. And I was never Dale Evans at any time. I was always Roy or Gene or Hopalong. No, or the Cisco Kid.
Getting a bit of a theme here. This is sort of, I've heard this before about this Gene Autry.
I have the trials too. No, honestly, I would come out of the movie, and it was, and I'd run home, and I was going to say we still have carnation milk, you know, the tin milk. Mm-hmm. So when the tin milk was opened by my mom, there's just a little, two little holes. Used a tin opener. So they became really valuable items for me. And, well, I guess for my brothers too. But my mother hated it. Because when it was empty, wash it out. And you took the label off it. And then you took it and you just jammed your heel down so that the tin then wrapped around the heel of your shoe. And when you walked with that, it sounded like a horse. So I would go home, and if there weren't any new tins, I had a stash of tins. And I sometimes would have to use a rock to push them in tight against the leather of my shoes. And then I would just clippity-clop, clop, like, you know, I was Roy or Jean or whoever. And, we played my brothers and myself and Dolly and Wilson.
Now, who was Dolly?
Dolly was my friend.
No, but who would Dolly play? Would she be playing Gene Autry?
No, Dolly was always... You're Dale. She was Dale Evans. She was the woman. So we'd sort of myself and the boys, we'd all decide who was who. You know, we had so many heroes to choose from, you know. As I say, it wasn't just Roy and Gene, and there was a Cisco Kid, and there was one of my favorites too, Rex Allen. Yeah, I always liked to be Rex Allen. I thought he was pretty neat. And so we'd all determine who each of us was. Dolly was always Dale.
Did she object to being Dale?
No.
Nope. She was absolutely fine with it.
She was okay with that. Mm. Yeah, she grew up and got married and had a whole bunch of kids. I guess that was her lot in life. It wasn't mine. I didn't want to be Dale.
Now, when you weren't clippity-cloppity around with your heels on, what kind of other stuff would you wear as a kid?
Lots of hand-me-downs from my sister. because we were poor folks. So I didn't really have a choice of what I wore. My mother made us a lot of our clothes. So going to school, you couldn't wear pants to school. That was a no-no. Except in the wintertime, you wore your, we had a name for them. Doesn't matter. But you'd have your skirt or your dress on, and you pulled on these warm over pants type thing, and your warm jacket. And you'd go to school, but you had to take that off. The girls could not wear pants to school. It was as simple as that. So that's what I wore. But on Saturdays, when I went to the matinee, I wore pants. And if I were to ever, ever get lucky enough to get a cowboy hat, I always wanted a white cowboy hat, because all the good guys wore white hats and the bad guys wore black. There you go. I wasn't a bad guy. I was a good guy. I was a white hatter.
Now, how did any of this change when you entered your teens? I'm wondering, first of all, I mean, what kind of information you were given when you were growing up, for example, about menstruation, any of that stuff?
Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. When my sister and her friend, Selma, so Elsie was my sister, and Selma was Dolly's sister. And as I said earlier, the two of them hung around together, and Dolly and I hung around together. Well, when the two of them got their periods, I guess for the first time, Elsie never wanted to go to the store and buy the Modess or Kotex. I mean, there was only two brands, Modess or Kotex. We called them the cornflakes in the blue box. So Elsie would say, "Would you go over and get me some cornflakes in the blue box?" And the thing is, Dolly and I knew what they wanted. So we'd go over to the store and we'd say, "Can we have some cornflakes in a blue box, please?" And old Mr. Mendelson always knew what we wanted. He'd get it, he'd put it in a brown paper bag and pass it to us like we'd just done a drug deal or something. And we'd go home with this. So Dolly and I, being the smart young girls that we were, we figured out why they had to use these. Both Selma and Elsie had boyfriends at that point. They were doing it with their boyfriends. We didn't know what they were doing. But somebody told us, "Oh, they have to wear those things when they're doing it with their boyfriends." Time we had to go get cornflakes in the blue box. Oh yeah, but we didn't time it like that. We didn't know that. But every now and then we had to go get some cornflakes in the blue box, and we knew it was because they were doing it with their boyfriends. I don't know why I never had to go and get anything for my mom. I think mom picked up her own, but Elsie was always running out of them. So then, I was 10 years old. In 1951, my grandfather took my aunt, who was only about, Elsie's 5 years older than me, so she's maybe 10 years older than me, if that. So my grandfather took my aunt and me. I guess that was it. We went to Ontario. We went to visit my aunt. She was already there and married. Okay, so he took me and he took somebody else. I don't know who he took. I can't remember. Doesn't matter. Anyway, I was only 10 years old. And my aunt had just gotten married. And she was pregnant. So we're in Galt, Ontario, which is now Cambridge, Ontario. So I got to sleep on this sort of chaise lounge that they'd borrowed, that my aunt had borrowed from the neighbor. Well, I woke up in the morning to find a pool of blood. And I thought I was dying. I didn't know that that's what Elsie was using the stuff for. Well, I got up and I felt so awful. So I didn't know how to tell my aunt, because I was sure that I'd ruined this chaise lounge. Like, it had a mattress on it. Mm-hmm. So I tried to cover it up, and I went off to the washroom, and I was in such a mess, and I also felt faint. So I had to call her, and I had to fess up that I don't know what happened, but this happened. So she was surprised that nobody had talked to me. Well, it just, I don't know, I guess it never occurred to them. Maybe it wasn't my time, you know, maybe I wasn't old enough yet. Because I was only 10 and they didn't expect, maybe that's, I would think that that's it. They didn't expect I was going to start at that early of an age, whereas, because Elsie was probably 13 or so.
Had somebody talked to her before she got her period? Did you ever find out?
Never bothered to find out. No, didn't ask. But anyway, so my aunt explained it to me. Well, as best she could, but she neglected to tell me one very, very important thing, that it can carry on more than one day. So she gave me one of these cornflake things out of the blue box. She had something. She was pregnant, so she wasn't using them. Of course, I didn't understand that either. But anyway, she happened to have some cornflakes in the blue box, so I knew she was doing it too. So she gave me one with a belt. It had this elastic belt. So I put this thing on, and then so I changed as necessary during the day. She showed me where they were. She said, now you must wrap them up really well, and you need to put them in a, don't flush them down the toilet. You need to wrap them up really well and put it in a bag and put it in the garbage. Don't leave them around and don't flush them down the toilet. So, okay. Well, that night, I guess it stopped for a while. So every time I went to the washroom and I checked and there wasn't any more, I thought, oh, good, that's it. So I went to bed and I woke up the next morning in another pool. This time she was not impressed. So that's... Then when I got back home, I talked to Dolly about it. Well, I mean, Dolly was surprised when I told her it had nothing to do with Elsie and Selma doing it. It had everything to do with us getting older. And it's part of growing up, you know, and you're going to be like this soon, too. So, but no, I asked Elsie about it. Elsie didn't want to talk about it. Hmm. So, anything I found out after that at school. Hmm. So, nobody gave me any formal education.
So, what about sex? Because, you know, obviously you were talking about doing it, and that had come from somewhere, this idea of doing something, but you...
But I didn't know what it was.
No. When did you find out what it was?
When did I find out? I was 12 when Mom had my brother, the youngest, whom she incidentally had on my birthday, my 12th birthday. So I'm the baby of the first family. He's the baby of the second family. We're both born on March 20th. Isn't that great? I thought it was wonderful. I don't think I knew about it. I was 12. Sex wasn't something that was discussed, and we didn't discuss it a lot at school either, like amongst our friends, probably because none of us knew, you know. There was some point, maybe when I was 12, no. Maybe when I was around 10, which would have made Elsie about 15, she was looking after us because Mom and Dad had gone to Newfoundland for a vacation and left us all there and left us with Elsie's good hands. Well, I got up during the night. Elsie and I always slept together, so I got up during the night. And Elsie wasn't in the bed. So I thought that she's sleeping in Mom and Dad's bed. And I think I had a bad dream or something, you know. So I went looking for her. And when I went into Mom and Dad's room, yes, Elsie was there. But so was Jimmy, her boyfriend.
Uh-huh.
And I knew at that point that there was something wrong with that because of the way she reacted. Mm. Frightened the hell out of her. Don't tell Mom and Dad. You know, she was just so afraid. I probably could have had anything I wanted from her at that particular time in her life if I wouldn't tell Dad. So I knew there was something wrong with what she was doing, but I didn't know what. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing that I was probably 10, maybe 11. So when I found out about sex, I don't know. It's hard to say because, you know, I was still going to school. Like I quit school at 15. Yeah, I would have 1956. I would have turned 15 in March. And as soon as school was out, that was it. I was gone. And I got a job as soon as I left school. I got a job first dishwashing, then pot washing. I graduated. And then I became a waitress, slinging hash, serving Cokes. Chips and gravy, cherry cokes. And this person, Ruth, who was older than me by 5 years, 6 years, she worked on the soda fountain. I was a waitress and she worked on the soda fountain. And she is the one that I had my first relationship with. So somewhere along the line, I knew something about, I guess, maybe Dolly and I, maybe we decided to find out what it was. Maybe we found out, you know, whatever it was. So, but then again, I can't remember that it was a big deal one way or the other, you know.
So when you got together with Ruth and sex was involved, did it not feel totally new or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, it was sort of a, you know, I mean, our three-year relationship, I must admit that, you know, it, you know, sort of, if it feels good, do it. It was that type of thing. It felt good, but I don't think my body was yet quite ready. I don't know. I don't know. But it just wasn't the total thing. I mean, the best was definitely yet to come. My 3 years with Ruth, I suppose it was sort of a, you know, it's a mutual masturbation thing that, although it was nice, it wasn't, ecstasy, you know, but I didn't know any better, you know, if you, yeah, if you haven't experienced sort of, you know, the total orgasm and all the wonders of love making, the fulfillment, the enjoyment, the everything of it, then you don't know what you're missing. And I guess in those 3 years, I didn't know what I was missing. So. So some, I don't know, somewhere along there, I suppose I knew something about sex, but I didn't know at all, because to date, right up until I joined the Air Force, and even after I joined the Air Force, even when I started going with Jack was a guy he was from British Columbia, and he was a farmer type guy from British Columbia who believed that you saved it until after you were married. And that was fine with me because he didn't pester me, you know. And I guess back then it was in the 50s and early 60s, late 50s, early 60s, so I guess I thought, yeah, that's the way it should be. You know, we shouldn't. And it took me a while to realize, you know, from going with Jack, that, you know, when we kissed, I mean, it was like that young school chum that walked me home from the matinee and gave me a kiss. His old kiss cardboard. You know, Jack was very sort of loving and tender and caring and whatnot. There was nothing sort of real macho about him. He was just a nice guy. And so when he'd kiss me goodnight at the barrack door, at the barrack locked door, it was just sort of a quick. Well, we were teenagers. So it was, that's all it was sort of a teenage kiss. I mean, whether he was walking me to the barrack block door from the canteen where we just had several beers, or given the age, if he was walking me from my classroom to home, you know, and kissing me at the door, that type of thing, because I was of that age where I probably should have been in high school, right? And not necessarily high school, but, you know, above that, maybe university or college or whatever. But it was sort of that type of dating that we did. It was sort of the teenage dating, where we, everything was polite about our relationship. Mm. Everything was polite. It was, he didn't take advantage of me in any way, not in any way. And I must say, at that point, like as I was growing up, I never got to see my brothers undressed. It wasn't something that was done. You know, Dad didn't walk around without his clothes on. Mom didn't walk around without her clothes on. And none of us walked around without our clothes on. And when you went in the bathroom, you closed the door. So seeing one another's privates, let's say, private parts, was just not something that was done in our family. So therefore, when I was quote-unquote dating,